From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, what we're going to do in the second hour today, Grant Smith. Grant Smith is the author of Big Israel, How Israel's Lobby Moves America, his eighth book about the Israel lobby. I think the guy has, a focus. Smith is the director of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy, a nonprofit organization that studies U.S. Middle East policy formulation. In 2014, Smith sued the Department of Defense in federal court and won release of a detailed report contracted in 1987 on the advanced state of Israel's nuclear weapons program. Okay, so Israel has a nuclear weapons program. Like, that's a big shock to anybody. In 2015, Smith sued the Central Intelligence Agency and won release of 131 pages of formerly classified information revealing its overseas agents obtained compelling evidence that Israel stole U.S. government-owned weapons-grade uranium in the 1960s to build its first atomic bombs. Stole? There, had it handed to him. We'll talk about it. The CIA's refusal to share this information thwarted two FBI investigations into the diversion. This is the subject of ongoing litigation. In this 30-year, his 30-year professional career as a researcher, Smith has investigated public sector lobbying, financial services, global telecommunications industries, worked in 22 countries assessing the impact of regulatory and trade regime changes, and managed multinational research teams. And then it goes on into, are we still giving money to Israel? And I'm going, I'm a libertarian, so I'm just, I tell you, Grant, I the special relationship that is special because Israel gets a lot of money to give back to congressmen to get more money to give the congressman special, and I'm going, I need to understand how deep this is, how serious it is, and when you got uranium, okay, you got nuclear material going to Israel to build atomic bombs, that is a special kind of relationship. Help me out with that, Mr. Smith.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Ernie.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Doug?
I said special means no criticism.
No criticism. Okay. All right, go ahead and go, Grant. Help me out.
Yeah, I want to thank you for having me on the show before everything else. And you still have audio? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Hello? Good, man. Go.
Okay. So there really isn't much mystery in the American public. Almost 64% of Americans believe Israel has nuclear weapons. But, yeah, the relationship is special, and it does bear specialized research. When we started doing a lot of our analysis back in 2002, we'd keep running into various large organizations, pro-Israel organizations, which had very decisive roles in educating Congress and in putting out information.
Educating even more Congress. I like that. That was good. They're educating Congress.
That's how they talk here in Washington, Ernie. You know that. It's everything's, sounds good. But, we'd keep running into these groups. And we also ran into a lot of the defense groups that are really averse and working proactively to knock down anybody who's looking too closely into these things. And a lot of the things you put in the intro there about releasing information, getting the CIA and Department of Defense to actually divulge what's been going on is important, because, you know, most of these are just basic cover-ups where there was a serious situation and the bureaucracies just didn't want the public to have much information about what was and, more importantly, what wasn't done about it. So one of the reasons we've gone after DOD and CIA twice in the CIA's case in court is really to pry this information out of them and reveal more to the public, things they should have known decades ago. And if it were any other country, they would have known immediately.
Okay, but I need to understand this. Is it a secret government project, a secret government shadow agency, a special relationship and get over it? Israel really runs, you know, the AIPAC really runs the government, and you're lucky we let you keep some of the money? I mean, you know, I mean, I'm wondering what the relationship is, because I'm getting the impression...
Well, it certainly runs the foreign policy.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I wouldn't say it runs a foreign policy in one sense, the clearest indication we've gotten. Well, they're very proactive, but one of the clearest senses we got that they don't run it is that AIPAC and all of the top tier advocacy organizations, whether it was the American Jewish Committee, the Anti-Defamation League, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, they were all very much pro, do not have any JCPOA, that deal with Iran over their nuclear programs. And they all lost.
That's true.
And so they can lose, and they have lost in the past. Right now, they're losing big time in terms of they want an aid package that will allow for a large percentage of the U.S. tax dollars just to flow right into Israel's military-industrial complex.
It's so absurd. Like, the whole concept of foreign aid is supposed to be that there's these, like, ailing nations of starving people who desperately need aid. Israel is a fully industrialized country. It's not like they need a handout.
Well, I need to understand this, Grant. You know, I get the impression that we... all right. When I was in high school, I graduated high school in 79, and there was my senior year, I think there was like a game they did, and to where every student, imagine you got 30 kids in class, and they gave you a card, and it was a game, and you had Supreme Court, you had Wall Street, you had congressmen, you had a president, and a Federal Reserve, you had a Federal Reserve in there.
Really?
And it was interesting. So they gave you a card, and it had five things on it. You have to increase human education, welfare, you know, by such and such $1 billion. You got to decrease this. You got to increase that. That was your goal.
Oh, so everyone's goals are different?
Everyone's goals are different. So you got this goal, and you go and you had to negotiate, and you create groups and caucuses and kind of doing look. And the big thing there was make sure that the money is not counterfeitable. So we're out with ditto machines, and we just counterfeited the crap out of it. And they go, hey, he cheated. He goes, yeah, they told me not to make it easy. That was just part of the game, you know?
Yeah.
So we're counterfeit. We're the Federal Reserve. But yeah, so I'm going, the goals were, you know, aid to Israel, increase this, do that. And you had groups of kids that would be a caucus that would come together to get vote and increase this. And you saw all the deal-making going on.
Yeah.
I experienced this in high school of how this works. And I'm going... Why is it that goal always on that card that some congressmen get, increase freaking aid to Israel, give Israel a bunch of money, they get the money and some more money, and now we're looking at to where they just want to be like a line item that's just automatic or something. It's like a pension fund or something.
That can't be questioned.
Well, yeah, right. If you're not in the simulation, if you're a congressman in that simulation running for office, what you'd be most worried about is having a solid campaign committee that could raise money for you, that could get your message out and talk to all the right constituencies. And it's all at that point, it's all about money.
Yeah,
and
but
so
see, this is the point
come up
that
to you
I'm
and
making.
Say, Mr. Congressman, I really want you to sign this letter saying that Israel is the linchpin of our Middle East policy and that you'll do everything you can to advance it.
Okay, now this is my point, is that they give you the money, to Israel, that takes the money to buy congressmen to get more money to Israel.
Right.
Really? How far off am I?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back. We'll be right back. The music's playing. We'll be back in just a little bit. Grant Smith. Yeah, I don't think you can hear the music. You know, there's something wrong with the thing.
No, no, I could. I could. I got it. I got clued in.
Yeah, music. Shut up. Yeah. All right, so this is what we're going to do. When we come back, how far off am I on that? I got the, even as a kid, I'm going, wait a minute, let me get this straight. So, because AIPAC was a thing in there. You know what I mean? It was like, you know,
in your
Israel.
Mock government, they had
yeah,
AIPAC.
In the mock government, oh, Israel was a thing. It was like everybody had as a goal, increase aid to Israel.
You had a okay? much more educational mock government than I had.
It was cool. You know, when I went to, I was doing some college in Fort Worth, and they had some kind of thing they were talking about, and I just told the teacher about this, and she went and did it.
I literally got out of high school not knowing whether or not Israel existed, because the only thing that I ever read about Israel was in conspiracy materials. And so it was this weird, like, does it exist or doesn't it exist? Like, is it like the Illuminati? Like,
oh, you thought like Israel was like a
yeah,
fictitious
because
thing?
That was the only place I ever got information about it was from conspiracy stuff. And so for me, it was like one of these big bad Leviathan things that, like, maybe it's a work of fiction or maybe it's a real conspiracy.
What year did you graduate?
Let me answer Ernie's question. I think one of the really big misconceptions, although AIPAC was indirectly funded with overseas funds back when it was starting out in the 50s and 60s as a small unincorporated entity and another group, there is really no indication that there's dollars coming out of that foreign aid that we deliver circulating back into the U.S. There's a lot more money in terms of reports and quantifiable evidence that U.S. donors like Sheldon Adelson and others are pumping more money into Israeli politics than is the reverse.
Because why?
There's a lot of money.
Well, no, I mean, if I got $5 billion, go however many, what's it up to now each year?
Well, it's around 3.1 plus a bunch of add-ons, $600 million there, another, you know, $500 million
yeah,
there.
It's like they get Bradley vehicles that have extra armor. They get the better version of this tank. They get the, you know, it's like, oh, no. They don't get the run-of-the-mill U.S. troop version. They get the Israeli version, okay?
So, well, in some sense, it's even commodities. $1.50 a gallon aviation fuel. They bought $3 billion worth of that with aid. I mean, it's not exactly fueling high-tech industry when you're, you know, providing $3 billion worth of aviation fuel to another state.
But so, you're fueling the war machine.
There's some misconceptions that all of this is high-tech weaponry. They would rather have the money and invested in their own industries for high-tech weaponry,
okay.
With the exception of some things they couldn't make, which would be like the, you know, Joint Strike Fighter and that sort of thing.
Well, see, this is my point, is that if I give a bunch of money to them and then they're mm-hmm. creating their own industries, these industries, you know, for lack of a better example, military-industrial, New World Empire, we rule you complex of whatever, you know, that's a bunch of money and profit that, you know, can go a little something for a congressman to make sure I keep getting it.
Well, if the U.S. Yeah, the current
hey, let's talk,
drive
let's talk, when
is
we
to
come
make
back,
all the
when we come back, let's okay. talk about the money, how the money yeah. is used, from whom, to whom, in what way. Because I simplify it by just saying, look, there's a bunch of money, it goes to Israel, and they make sure they keep getting more money. How do they do that? I don't know. That's why we're talking to Grant Smith. All right, we're coming back. You can tell us all about it.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Born to wave the flag.
Yeah, I'm I'm good. You know, and then it's which flag? And then they have a meshing of flags, and it's kind of, yeah, I mean, you know, it gets ugly.
So did you know that the Pledge of Allegiance used to be, I pledge allegiance to my flag, not the American flag, and they changed it because immigrants were confused and they thought they meant the flag of their home nation?
Hey, man, you know, they dial it in. You got to dial it in. You know, well, we got dialed in. I mean, my entire life, I'm born in 61, graduated high school 79. And I was inundated with Israel. Israel. Yeah. And it's just, it hadn't got any, you know, lightened up. And it's really, so I want to get a straight line of my tax money comes out of my pocket and it goes and kind of, I'm funding the whatever of whatever. And I need Grant Smith to help me with that because I'm looking, and his website is irmep.org. How the Israeli lobby moves America. IRMEP.org. First, Grant, tell me what IRMEP stands for.
Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy.
Okay. So now in this Middle Eastern policy, walk me through the money. Because for me, I go, oh, I get it. So we give a bunch of money to Israel to fund congressmen, kind of give it more money for Israel. I mean, you know, what's it for?
That's it's not quite that way, Ernie, but it's close. Here's how it works. You know, basically, since 1948, Israel has been the largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid. So it's far in excess of any foreign aid we've given to any other country. Upon formation, the year after, we gave them the equivalent of $1 billion. We just said, here you go. And it's been that way largely because there is a wide network of affinity organizations that lobby through AIPAC and ask Congress to lavishly fund through weapons transfers and industrial development and refugee resettlement all sorts of Israeli government programs. And so they've been very, very effective at doing that. They're not required to register as foreign agents like most other countries, which is there were a lot of battles in the 60s over that. And they've been very effective at rewarding members of Congress through campaign contributions to get that aid funded every year. Right now, AIPAC this spring, it put out a bunch of petitions to its membership and said, look, sign these petitions to your congresspersons, send us money, and then when this aid starts getting going, we're going to make sure that they hear. We're going to bundle these petitions. We're going to give them to every member of Congress. They're going to be clued in to who the big donors in their district are. You know, that's all done separately. And they're going to know that if they don't toe the line, if they don't provide this increase in aid to between $4 and $5 billion a year over the next 10 years, then, you know, they're going to get primary. They're going to have all sorts of opposition in their hometown newspaper, and they're going to be in trouble. So that's, you know, basically the way the money flows. It's taxpayer dollars paying for all of these goodies for Israel. It's not all high-tech goods. You know, they're buying 864 million gallons of unleaded gasoline to run their vehicles. They're running, 60 million gallons of unleaded gas. They're buying 864 million gallons of jet fuel. They're getting all of these things, food for the army. They're getting all of these things free, and that frees them up in some sense to develop their own industrial programs. We would argue and have argued in our lawsuit, it frees them up to continue development of their nuclear program, their nuclear weapons program, and other things. So,
yeah, well, what's your complaint,
it's a big
though?
Lobbying initiative.
What's your complaint? You're going, that frees them up. They're an ally, and they help us kick ass in our land-based aircraft carrier in the Middle East, and we need, and then, oh, by the way, they tell us what to do. But, I mean, aside from that, you know, it's a... I'm wondering what it is that your argument, you go, we shouldn't do that because why? Or is it illegal in some way?
One of the arguments, and we mentioned this in our lawsuit, which, by the way, we're suing the executive branch and federal agencies, saying basically that this aid is illegal because we've got various laws prohibiting transfers to nuclear weapons states called the Symington and Glenn Act. But basically, why is it bad? We don't get anything in return for this. Israel is not the unsinkable aircraft carrier. They actually don't provide anything of value at all to the United States.
Oh, you mean the special relationship doesn't flow the other way?
I'm afraid not.
Okay, now, see, my point in this is that you know, yeah, it's a bad idea. I don't. I just assume no foreign aid. Hell, I just assume they not take any of my tax money. I'm a libertarian, man. I'm like, you know, and we're done. But the point is that there's an actual break in the law for them doing what they're doing is what you're advocating, right?
Well, there's that, but there's also the broader point of back in 1960, the president was informed by the CIA, look, if Israel goes nuclear, they're never going to feel compelled to make peace with the Palestinians or their neighbor. They're going to become a much more aggressive player. They're going to leverage those nukes into all sorts of leverage over major powers. Basically, what we're getting is blowback, and we're getting increased leverage on ourselves for providing all of this aid. So it's a bad, it's inherently a bad idea, but it is also illegal. Symington and Glenn, two senators back in mid-1970s, said, look, we're going to modify and change the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961. States that are developing and transferring nuclear weapons technology do not qualify for U.S. aid unless, Ernie, the president tells Congress that this is a vital U.S. national security interest. And our argument is, we didn't put this in the lawsuit, but that they would be very hard-pressed for making that argument.
But that is their argument, that, you know, our aid to Israel is because it's a special, it's special, I know, because Rudy Giuliani kept saying it on the
because it's a bastion of Western civilization in the Middle East.
One of the arguments. That's one of the arguments, but there's never been a major survey of the global values index in Israel to really show what the values and what the similarities are. So I would say that's
there's
an open
a survey?
Question. There is a survey that's conducted in every country, with the exception of Israel, called the World Values Index. And, you know, they've never allowed it to be fielded in Israel. So I would say that's an open question. We don't really know.
Okay, now this is, you
on
have
a quantitative basis.
Well, you have a, you know, beat on this Israel thing, so help me out here.
Yeah.
What the hell is Israel? I mean, what is their philosophy? What is it? Who's in charge? Is it the same people that run Israel run America? I mean, you know, how big a separation are we looking at here?
That's a really good question, Ernie. I mean, it's got a Knesset. It's got a different form of government, a parliamentary system, you know, 7 million population.
Stop right there. My thing is, not that, you know, what their textbook, school, child, whatever the hell thing. I'm looking at America. Yeah. Is anybody gets even a glimmer of how it really works? It isn't anything like what they teach in junior high civics. It is those. Who's in charge? They. Who's they? I don't know. The ones who won't leave me alone. And it seems like it's the same group or people or philosophy or something, certainly representing, they're going to kick ass Israel as they do America. When we come back, we're going to try and overlap and find the commonality. Okay, when we come back, that's what I want to focus on.
Yeah.
You know, is this, you know, yeah, well, they're Knesset, and they're going, that don't mean nothing to me, okay? It's they, them, those, somebody's in freaking charge if I rule you, and I'm wondering, and it's becoming more and more clear for Americans here, it doesn't matter, some international, your force now belongs to the biodiversity of we kick your ass if you, you know, walk on it, you know, with any shoes. So I'm going, there's something else going on, and Israel, benefits, suffers, or whatever from it as much as we do. So I'm going...
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, there's something.
I think what you're trying to get to is what is the influence,
right?
And how does the influence work?
It's
either a philosophy or it's a they them. They
always, when you're in radio and so on, you go, oh, they this and they that. And of course, when I first started doing radio back in 2003, they'd be like, they, who are, you're one of them, you know, a conspirator, you know, who are they? And I go, I'll tell you who they are.
Yeah.
Okay, this is who they are. There are those that just want to be left alone. There are those that just want to be left alone. Okay, that's who they are.
They just won't leave them alone.
Yeah, they just won't leave me alone. That's who they are. So I'm going,
right.
When
yep.
I look at, and they're taking money from me, and they're, you know, funding my, you know, future of war and all this other crap I got, I'm going, look, man, they don't have my best interest at heart. Who are they? The ones that won't leave me alone. So I'm going, who is this entity, this philosophy that overrides, because it's not just America, it's the United States and Israel have the same injection point illness of vein tapped into IV something.
Yeah,
I need to understand what that is.
One of the really important things to mention is there, you know, if you really look at the core hardcore supporters of Israel in the U.S. It numbers, and this is by a Pew survey, it's about 774,000 adults, about the size of Charlotte, North Carolina, who work full time to make sure this relationship is rock solid, unquestioned, and they're really the nucleus here in the United States. These are the groups, you know, funding the think tanks, staffing them, volunteering them, you know, working in the various organizations, being loud when the politics come up.
And they have overlapping interest of how we're going to make some more money to get you some money. If you help us get some money, we got money, everybody gets money. And the taxpayers, you know, go into debt of the we're dead. So I'm going, there is a philosophy. Yeah. There's something out. There's a goal. There's over. Is it one big thing or is it just the banks? You know, is it the banks working with the industrial complex of the nuclear we rule and Dr. Evil's behind somewhere or something? I need to understand.
No.
Well, help me.
Yeah,
that's, you know?
So, yeah, I'll help you.
When we come back, that's what I need. Yeah. Skip to the freaking end, man. I want to know who Dr. Evil is.
All right. We'll go to chapter last. You got it.
That's cool. All right, man. We'll be right back. 1 minute.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
You know, there's something going. And I'm just, I need to understand the something. We have Grant Smith going to help us out. IRMEP.org. And the one thing that I'm looking at is there's a philosophy, there's a goal, there's a something that overshadows everything. Or is it just overlapping interest of, you know, if you help me, we'll help you get money, and you get us money, we all got the money, and the taxpayers ripped off of the money. And I'm going, is it that simple, or is there a Dr. Evil behind the scenes doing something? And then we get, you know, the leak. There is. I mean, we've got Soros's, the emails and stuff leaking out, and we got this guy and that guy. So walk me through it, Grant Smith.
There's no one guy. There's no one guy in a wing chair petting a white cat. It's really, you know, let me just break it down to you. This is all in the book Big Israel. It's really about not the Israelis and their power. It's about the lobby's power in the United States. Now, one of the things that came out recently, an NSA document that said that the advancement of Israel is the paramount goal of U.S. policy in the region. And it's become that goal, mainly unbeknownst to Americans, because of the incessant work of a $4 billion industry, the largest charity in the United States, if you want to call it that, bigger than the Salvation Army, bigger than, you know, the United Way. And it's divided into four sections: advocacy, spending close to $500 million, local groups that are raising funds and engaged in political action without registering as lobbyists across every major population center, about $1 billion a year, subsidy organizations that are just raising money in the U.S. and shipping it to Israel, and education organizations that are really working to make Americans more sympathetic to the Israeli cause, and they are indeed sympathetic. If you look at a poll, most Americans are generally sympathetic to Israel's case, but if you ask them about the aid and say, look, we're giving these guys more than anybody else, and it's 9% of the budget, you've got 60% saying, you know, we really shouldn't be doing that. So, you know, you don't have to look for the guy with the white
9%
cat.
Of what budget? Yeah. You're talking State Department or foreign aid?
9% of the U.S. foreign aid budget.
Okay, yeah, man. I mean, damn. So this is here in Arizona, they have in Phoenix, it's called Jewish News, I think. It's a newspaper. Whenever it's election cycle, all the candidates get asked what they think about something. And you publish your, you know, it's a lobbying thing. So I'm going, all right. So what you're saying is Israel is just a horse they're riding. These lobbyists, they don't care. They just like, ooh, that's an easy horse. We make some money. We just slap Israel on it and, you know, or say, you know, if we could, you know, combine Israel with global warming, we'd be freaking zillionaires.
Yeah, it's actually not that easy anymore with the advent of alternative news.
Right.
A lot of these people are getting shouted down on those sorts of causes. And, you know, a lot of political organizations are having a hard time selling this stuff the way they used to.
So are they weakening? Is this lobby weakening?
It's weakening in the sense that they lost their biggest program, which was torpedoing the JCPOA. It's weakening in that they really preferred operate behind the scenes, and they'll tell you that. You know, we want a back channel to Israel. We don't want all of these disputes publicly. And they're losing that debate because anytime a president gets in trouble, he just says, well, you know, Obama did it. Bush has done it. He's just basically saying, we got all these lobbyists on my back and I can't do anything.
Okay,
so
two things I want to know before we let you go. I want to, you know, talk about the book and what the end result of the book is, the book, and then the POTUS election. We got to talk about, you know, the Trump and Stein and Hillary and Johnson. And this guy, oh, what the heck? Yesterday I saw Gary Johnson saying that he needs Mitt Romney in his cabinet. We're so totally screwed. Seriously. I'm going, are you freaking? Yeah. That's a Bill Weld thing right there. So I just know if you got Bill Weld and CFR, Council for Foreign Relations kind of crap inside this campaign, where I think Israel's going to get taken care of by libertarians in there too, you think?
You never know. You never know. They're probably the least likely, you know, just being inherently against foreign aid. I kind of doubt he's going to be able to make that move. But let me take the bait on the Big Israel book. It's basically a profile of 336 organizations since 1860 to the present. You know, where they came from, how they gradually shifted their focus to Israel after it was created, what they do, what their programs are, commonalities, differences. And it's really probably the only comprehensive survey that'll ever be done, since a lot of these tax filings we relied on to produce it are slowly being changed and watered down. But it's just basically saying, here's how many they are, here's how much they're spending, here are some of the problems and concerns that you should be aware of. So Big Israel, how Israel's lobby moves America. And then getting into the presidential campaign, I mean, you really did have a Donald Trump emerging saying, hey, we're not going to give anybody foreign aid or support. NATO's on the table. You know, the Israelis are rich. They should pay for their own aid. That threw a huge wrench into the primaries, and it didn't apparently hurt him. All these evangelicals who are supposed to vote only on the Israel issue came out in support of him.
It's art of the deal, man. Art of the deal. He's like, you know, take it from a negotiation position and you don't get none. How about none?
Right.
Well, wait. He goes, oh, well, we're starting from my negotiating position is none. Now what do you want to talk about? You know, so he's just, you know, following his book's advice or something.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people didn't like that, and he's now changing his position. So you had Hillary Clinton, of course, who's always been, you know, basically in the pocket of the lobby, and her husband was in the pocket of the lobby, and that'll continue. They obviously torpedoed Bernie Sanders and all of his plank and platform committee members.
Well, what do you think is going to be the revelation behind Soros's information? You know, where's he at on this?
I have a hard time reading whether he's doing what he thinks is best or trying to be again that guy with the cat that you're talking to. I don't have much on that, but I do know that Jill Stein, just to wrap up the POTUS race, you know, the Green Party candidate, has responded to her base, which is kind of, you know, a base that wants for there to be Palestinian rights and less aid and all of that. So you've got, you know, you've got a pretty broad spectrum. And I like you, I'm not quite sure where Johnson's going on all of this. But the tradition has been, hey, foreign aid is not a good investment, and it creates blowback and kind of the Ron Paul message that's been well received among the libertarian community. So,
you know,
we'll have to see how that evolves.
Well, it's all about just our focus has always been public opinion. You just get, you go, no, they're still doing it. They're going, yeah, but the public opinion is they shouldn't do that. Well, they got to change public opinion. You should do that. Nah, they shouldn't do that. And is it from things like the internet or alternative news or your book?
Absolutely.
And, you know, and so I'm wondering, you've been doing this for how long?
Well, 10 years and focusing more and more on the Israel lobbies and running into it.
Over that 10 years, what has been the trend?
The trend has been people are becoming less trustful of elected government, less trusting of establishment media. They're supporting financially all sorts of alternative and revisionist and challengers out there in terms of the nonprofits and media. I mean, I suspect, Ernie, you know all this because you're out
there,
too.
Well, you know, but it doesn't manifest itself at the ballot box because it's like they run the ballot box. And I'm wondering, you know, it's all, well, this time it's the most important election ever. And I'm going, all the more reason that they control it. They wouldn't do election fraud. That'd be wrong. I'm going, come on. So where's the change? Well, when we come back, we'll talk about where the change is coming from. Yeah, you see, you feel me? I'm like, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've run for office every 2 years since 90. I don't vote, you know, but I'll run. I go, yep, you good. Should, if you're voting, you know, you would probably vote for freedom. But my whole thing, I ran for Secretary of State twice, County Recorder twice, Congress three times against John McCain for U.S. Senate. I mean, I'm just, you know, out there and getting some. But the point is that I'm going, don't ever think that this balloting process is there to represent you. I mean, don't ever think that, because I freaking know. I've uncovered, so I'm Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal oral argument before standing there. I got an argument, got my butt hit. But the thing is that it was all just to demonstrate how corrupt the entire system is. So when you challenge the system, you know, to sit there and, you know, advocate for a certain way to vote or something is missing the whole freaking point. You are not represented. You are not able to cast your vote in some kind of, you know, security, you know, that it's going to be accurately counted, any of that stuff. And especially when it comes to dealing with issues of Israel.
Your vote is not even within the margin of error of counting the ballots, okay? Like, if it came down to one vote, they would not count that vote. They would let it be decided by judges. Like...
So so I need to know from you as you're doing this and the influence and the great, great influence that this stuff has, your advocacy of a solution is what? You know, public opinion, just not, I mean, because the voting, they'll go, yeah, man, people might not vote for us if they knew about that. Well, maybe they would if we flipped the switch.
Yeah, no, I still think we're in early stages, Ernie, and I really think that the awareness is still not there. But, you know, if you do your own public opinion polling, and we do a lot of it, and it's all statistically significant, if you ask the questions that the mainstream pollers are not asking, you do find that people don't support a lot of this stuff. And it's just, I think that alternative media is where the game's at right now. You know, we may not win this court case. We may not have anyone in elected office who's good on any of these issues, but you can believe me, they're feeling the pressure whenever a survey comes out and shows that they're basically doing the opposite of the people they allegedly represent. That hurts, and all of that news really goes viral. So I think the pressure is there. But I agree that there's a lockdown, you know, whether it's ballot access, debates, you've really got a two-party system lockdown on all of the levers of power. And, yeah, becoming Secretary of State with all that power over voting machines, et cetera, is certainly a tough nut to crack.
Well, it's not a tough nut to crack in the opinion of people. And I always looked at my, you know, how many people weren't voting. And then you get like the Lovolution with Dr. Paul, and you have and side note, I'm the one that created the Ron Paul Lovolution logo. So I got right in with these young guys. I was an activist all this time. I knew once they got exposed to, you know, just sanity, you know, they'd demonstrate their support. But, you know, that opinion of people way more powerful than what some vote total is, and I don't give a crap. So I'm trying to how you take it back, you know? And I and is it just opinion? Well, that's what your books are doing. I'm wondering who's supporting you too. You know, so all right, we'll talk about that when we come back. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. All fair game.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Country music's got mamas and daddies. We got barrooms and no heartbreak songs. But I'm here today to stand up and say how I feel about my home sweet home. What's left, what's right, and what's wrong. And I'm taking my country back.
Yeehaw!
Son, you ain't been
every ride. You know, what was interesting about this? This was during Dixie Chicken, okay? When they were like, I'm not a fan of George Bush, and I'm kind of, no. And what happened was, this was the honky-tonk, you know, country Nashville community. It's supposed to be all, you know, George W. Republican Bush kind of thing. And what they had done is they came up with this song that, you know, was, we're anti-war and we're kind of, you know, and it was, you know, heavily played on progressive stations and all that kind of stuff. It was a sentiment that was represented in honky-tonk. And I'm going, if you can change opinion, if you can change the way people think about things, if you could just change, you know, a representative, somebody go, yeah, what they said, well, then you got something. Internet has allowed for that, because before it was just media. So I'm going, the claim that Israel and the Jewish lobbies and all that kind of stuff, it really has a lockdown on the media. I'm wondering how true that is. Rick Sanchez of CNN, you know, he's out there. He's a growing concern until he got up and he said, I don't know what Jon Stewart from The Daily Show is complaining about. The Jews control all the media. Boom, he's fired. Done. You don't get to say that.
Yeah.
So how influential, in our opinion, is the Israel lobby, Grant?
Yeah, well, I would contest a little bit throwing around terms like Jewish lobby, especially when you find out that only about 15% in a Pew survey of American Jews are actually involved with any of these organizations. The most, you know, most of them don't have much to do with these organizations. They don't really support. They don't belong, 82% don't belong to Jewish organizations. Only 70% say they're somewhat attached, but most are not at all attached to Israel. Only 50% have ever been there. 44% think settlement building is a bad idea. So one of the interesting things is that many new Jewish organizations are saying Israel, settlements, constant war, forget it. And they're actually leading some of the I would call it not blowback, but they're leading some of the backlash against these establishment organizations. They're really challenging them and saying, look, you guys talk as though you represent everybody and you represent a bunch of big donors. You have these stagnant boards of directors and leaders like Malcolm Honlein and other leaders of the ADL that stay for a quarter century and they never give up their posts, and they just they're an embarrassment. And so,
well, there's been these groups in New York that I remember there were some of the more Orthodox Jews that didn't believe in the founding of how they, and they were always critical, and even some in Israel,
the Rudy Carda,
and they make a big deal out of that.
There's also things like Jewish Voice for Peace, which is more
general son. Jewish Voice for Peace
is a more like mainline. Like, I come from a partially Jewish family, so I have a lot of Jewish friends in California where I'm from, and I don't know anybody who's like a hardcore pro-Israel Zionist. Like, they don't identify with AIPAC and these organizations at all.
Not the younger kids, exactly. And so that's
not
one
even
of the
older.
Really
not even my parents' generation.
Well, the older generation tends to be more supportive, but yeah, I agree. So I think you gotta really look at who's in the Israel lobby at this point. And even though they'll say that they represent the entire American Jewish community, it's just not true, and they need to be called on it. And so I think that's one thing that's really one of the biggest things that's going to change. Is just calling their bluff and their claims that they're any sort of representative organizations.
So who is it? What is it? It's just money. It's a it It's a Israeli government special interest industrial military. I got contract of bunch of money. I want to keep the money going to the money. I mean, is it just the money?
It's you know, a relatively small number of extremely wealthy donors provide the backbone of these organizations.
Why?
If you look at the top donor, like the Republican, why? Because they are very committed. Sheldon Adelson and Haim Saban, who are two billionaires, are very committed to Israel. You know, Haim Saban is Israel.
They want a front seat because in heaven or something? What?
No, he's just very convinced that there needs to be a strong Israel that's able to influence and be on the world stage and be a major player. And that's, you know, that's his view, and he has every right to it. Does he have the right, though, to actually try to put money in the pockets of superdelegates like he did in the last election cycle so that they'll be pro Hillary Clinton so that he can have more influence? I would say no. I would say that a lot of these people need to be prosecuted when they violate the laws. There's all sorts of stuff coming out about Mark Rich and his pardon and his ties to the Clintons. You know, a lot of these mega donors who have so much influence and really built this network, because this network runs on money. The Israel lobby runs on money. They have special privileges, and they're essentially above the law when it comes to any sort of accountability when they do step over the line.
Special. You know, that's this presidential election cycle, you're kind of, are you taking a side, have an opinion? Does it matter? You're going, you know, this one to piss them off, or, you know, what's your view on what to pay attention for in the POTUS race?
Well, like what we've been saying about how important it is for alternative media to be out there and just showing what everything that's wrong, I think elections are a big chance to step in, to wade in and do big things, whether it's a message, whether it's a lawsuit, whether it's taking out a candidate in terms of releasing information in an intelligent way. And all of those things are going on, and they're not all by big players. And so I would encourage everybody to really look at what's going on in the most innovative groups that are challenging the war. You know, again, just to go back to Donald Trump, he was the only candidate who was saying the invasion of Iraq was the dumbest thing America could ever do. You have other groups and organizations, you know, basically have been saying that for a decade or more. And so to the extent that people can really challenge these politicians, challenge all of their corrupt networks of fundraising and patronage, elections are a wonderful thing. Now, whether you're going to get a candidate that's worth voting for, you know, I'm not so sure that we're there yet, but you got to keep
the fight. Well, do you have a preference? I mean, are you like a participant? Yeah, I'm going to, you know, I just can't muster up enough confidence that they're not just going to, they're lying to me and just piss me off. But at least, you know, Trump is representing the dissatisfaction with the status quo, and he's perceived as not being the status quo, and then he starts, you know, wanting to freaking make his whole cabinet the status quo. So I'm just going, you know, what does he represent?
Yeah, right. Well, and a lot of people felt the same way for Bernie Sanders. My role as head of a nonpartisan organization is to keep on these issues no matter who's in office. We don't take a side. We don't get into electoral politics at all.
We're already against the
next
war.
Exactly. So be against the next war and try and reveal the corruption that really causes all of these massive misallocations of resources. And I just really think it's important to work with people who are 80% on your side and doing the good work. And so, yeah, again,
well, where does your support
come
from? I mean, you're not getting a whole lot of Israel lobby money, are you?
No, but there's other money out there. Our average donor's given $110 a year. They've gradually seen, you know, the work that we're doing, we're building up that support. I would rather get $50 a year from the average American family than I would get any giant allocation from Mark Rich, you know, who funded a lot of the Israel lobbying organizations when he was still around. Sheldon Adelson can keep his money. I would rather have the $50. And I think a lot of organizations and news media are finding that they may have some assumptions going into this, but if they do good work, the money will find them.
Yeah, you know, it's just because of the ability to do crowdsource funding, to have a they go, I like that, do that again, here's $50 and premium
there job,
and oh my God, a book! Yo, let's pump the book.
We got a business.
We have right. The book, you know, that is available. You go on the site here on our archive and you just click right on it, you know, and it's all about, you know, this very issue. Go ahead and pimp your book real quick, Big Israel.
Yeah, Big Israel. It's on sale at Amazon. It's in Kindle, and soon it'll be out on audiobook. So buy Big Israel and see what's going on.
Big Israel. You want to know what's going big? Is it getting small? I think Big Israel is starting to, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they, you know, don't stand up. So I'm wanting to look. I'm seeing the champ. I've lived long enough to see it build into, go up, crescendo, start to go down, and it all comes down to communication between individuals' ideas.
These statements absolutely have not been evaluated.
All right, there we go. Thank you very much, Grant. You know, I'd like to be able to call on you again when there's some news stuff that you might be able to comment on, certainly in the political season here.
Yeah, I hope that you can, if you see something on aid or the MOU or a major development in terms of U.S.-Israel relations, I'd love to be on your show. You don't have to give me a ton of advance notice.
All right, well, just, you know, you got something, just let me know. Just email Don and boom, yeah. We're on. M-U-O, M what?
The Memorandum of Understanding, the big, big 10-year commitment to funding Israel.
Is there, has there been one, or are they trying to create a 10-year thing?
The last one is expiring, and the next one is in negotiations right now. So it's
really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, very, very interesting. So as soon as there are more details around what it is we're supposed to give them, that would be a good chance to do another analysis.
Well, believe is that me, going to be in the session after the election?
It should be later this month.
So they're working on it. So yeah. They will have voted on this before the end of this election.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're going to saddle the next president, whoever he or she is, with this giant commitment, which is in and of itself something worth a few minutes
of discussion.
Okay,
will it be committed to, or is it going to be this next president is going to have to be willing to sign on to it or something?
Well, essentially, after it's signed off, it's considered non-negotiable. So President Bush did it. He signed an MOU, but Obama was left to implement and pay for most of it by signing off on all of these aid legislation pieces that came through Congress. So the expectation is that this will be the written in blood contract of the next president to support Israel at least at this level for the next 10 years.
Okay, wait. And there's no presidential sign off law kind of. It's just Congress says do this. Butthead?
Well, the way the MOU is between both governments, it's less than a treaty, but it's more than a promise.
No, I need to understand this government that it's between. Is it the Congress? It's the House of Representatives? It's the Senate needs to approve this? Is it a treaty Senate level thing? Does the president have to sign on to it? It's a memorandum of understanding of we got enough congressmen that just freaking do it because we said? I need to know the level of commitment this thing is.
The mechanics. Yeah, the commitment is huge. Congress has already essentially passed legislation affirming their support for the MOU, whatever
okay.
it is.
It but does then not every, require every single executive piece, approval.
The MOU requires executive approval. I mean, it's basically their promise negotiated with the Israeli government. And then Congress has to develop and essentially pass legislation to be signed off by the president that executes the MOU. So
I'm wondering, this memorandum of understanding is negotiated, written, voted on, presented, thrown on somebody's desk by whom?
No, it's there's no vote about the MOU. The MOU is negotiated between the executive branch and
so it's
the
a State
Israeli.
Department, Secretary of State Kerry thing.
Yeah, the DOD's involved in it, the National Security Council, you know, Netanyahu's office, and they're basically...
I'm not getting the feeling that congressmen or people representatives kind of representing here anywhere.
Well, they are in the sense that they've already said that they support the the next MOU, whatever it is, and they've already expressed the sense of Congress that it should be big and it should be comprehensive. So, it's, you know, there are a couple moving pieces, but basically to get any money out of the MOU, I mean, the executive doesn't just transfer funds. I mean, they've got to pass some legislation.
Okay.
Funding, by the way, the entire State Department and all of its foreign aid programs.
Does
that have the section.
Does the Memorandum of Understanding have legal force of law that somebody could sue to have Congress enact it and the court say you got to pass and give them money?
If you were to sue against the MOU, I don't know what standing you'd have to do that. What we've done is we've really sued against the transfer of any funding from the Treasury into any of these defense articles because our statement is, and in a lawsuit you can read it, it's on our webpage, that they're violating Symington and Glenn because it's incumbent upon the president to make a ruling on their nuclear weapons program and how it impacts aid. And he can either say no more aid or he can say this is in the national security interest of the U.S., but what they prefer to do is neither. But I don't know what you could sue on in terms of the MOU.
Well,
Congress, again...
This information, you know, about this kind of stuff is nuanced stuff that you have CIA giving briefings to Trump and you got somebody like Trump coming in. And is he, you know, someone that says more detail oriented and this kind of understands this stuff, or is he negotiating, or he's just, you know, throwing red meat out for, you know, the masses? Or I'm wondering how sophisticated he is on this stuff, really understand when he says these things, you know, that he understands what he's up against.
I doubt that his briefing has in any way included anything about the Israeli MOU or negotiations. I assume that, you know, Truman wanted presidents to know about big things like, hey, you know what? We have an atomic bomb. Oh, hey, you know what? We're about to launch this major offensive over here. Oh, hey, you know what? The Japanese are actually going to go nuclear next month. That's what those are about. This is pretty much small potatoes to be involving an incumbent or a candidate on. So I assume that they're not talking about this, but... You know, again, the aid legislation, what's going to happen is that they're probably going to sign something this month, and then Congress is going to say, okay, let's implement that. And they might even say, hey, let's give them a little bit more money than was negotiated.
God,
and see if the president vetoes it.
I so don't feel represented, know what I mean? I'm just,
well,
hell no.
Call your congressman.
Yeah.
At least you have one.
God. All right, man. Hey, I got to get my next guest. Thanks for spending time. We will talk soon.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Bye.